Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. With all the oil sands activity in northeastern Alberta, rebuilding the forest landscape after mining is done is critical. But there's a lot to learn about how to do it properly. The Canadian Oil Sands Network for Research and Development recently sponsored a symposium which brought together many of the young researchers working on reclamation science. And Dr. Alex Turda of the Alberta Research Council has developed a new method that could greatly improve the amount of oil produced from heavy oil sites. He calls it toe-to-heel water flooding. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Oil sands deposits in northeastern Alberta just happen to be right in the middle of the boreal forest. Digging for the oil means stripping away the forest and the organic soils that support the growth of trees and other boreal plants. It also means destroying the wetlands that are the foundation of the boreal ecosystem. That's why reclamation is so important. But reclamation science is still in its infancy as far as oil sands work goes. Clara Kualitsa is a soil scientist with Syncrude Canada, and she coordinates the company's reclamation research. Clara also chaired a recent symposium, which brought together many of the young researchers who are adding to our knowledge of reclamation science.
This is the Canadian Oil Sands Network for Research and Development, our annual symposium covering our reclamation and environmental research that the oil sand industry does to enhance our operational reclamation practices.
What are some of the things that you're looking at this conference?
Oh, there's a good question. We're looking at pretty much everything from landform design to soil capping approaches to revegetation techniques, all the science that goes into our decisions about how we actually put back the landscapes that we use. And so it's everything from fundamental science. For example, we heard this morning some very interesting research on techniques, microbial techniques to track microbial diversity in our soils, all the way to how do we actually strip and place soils to enhance native plants establishment. And then tomorrow we're going to actually be talking about some very neat stuff about food webs in our reclaimed landscapes. So everything from groundwater to plants to bugs.
It sounds like you have a lot of master students and PhDs working up on these sites, just like Syncrude. It's a big lab.
It is. These are great big outdoor research areas. Each of the operating companies actually now has an instrumented slope or instrumented watershed where a lot of these students are doing their research outside at a landscape scale, because we are doing reclamation at very large scales, and so the studies need to reflect how the dynamics of systems of watersheds, of actual full-size watersheds, and so they are great big outdoor labs for these kids to study in.
How are the results or their findings being incorporated into the reclamation work that you have to do?
Well, that's a very good question. It's through conferences like these symposia that we get the communication from the research to our operations staff. We have a lot of oil sand industry staff here today listening to this work. And we're just developing a technology transfer program where we basically download the pure science into operations techniques. And that involves partnering with our university principal investigators to kind of distill out, okay, so we know there's this many microbes. What does that mean for our soil reclamation? And we're just in the process of developing that program, technology transfer.
What do you see as being some of the biggest problems that you have to overcome in terms of the reclamation that you're doing in the oil sands area?
Well, I think the challenges are being able to design the landforms and incorporating all of the diversity that we want in our final landscapes within the space that we're confined to up at the site. There's also issues around just also with the design of landforms to manage the water that we have in our landscapes. These reconstructed landscapes are very dynamic in their early years, and so trying to make sure we design them properly to manage the water in the landscape. And proper soil salvage and storage, you know, with new mines coming on, salvaging the soils properly and keeping them so that they stay healthy and are able to be used successfully. So, but we've got research, again, looking at all of those challenges. So I think we're on track.
Thank you very much, Clara.
No problem. Thank you for coming.
That was Clara Kwolitsa, a soil scientist with Syncrude Canada and chair of the recent symposium on reclamation research sponsored by the Canadian Oil Sands Network for Research and Development. One of the exciting discoveries presented at the Reclamation Research Symposium came from Dean McKenzie, a master's student in renewable resources at the University of Alberta. Dean's research suggests that revegetation by native plants will have a much better chance at success if soil is spread much thinner than is the current practice.
Well, what we're looking at right now is using donor soils as a source of propagules, so seed and plant vegetative parts, for revegetating, you know, these disturbed landscapes in the oil sands. Industry right now is using this peat mineral mix to act as an organic matter source for a surface soil. And what's happening is we're not salvaging this thin organic layer that's on upland plant communities. It's this LFH layer. You know, the different letters just designate different degrees of decomposition. So past studies have looked at, you know, species diversity, abundance of the LFH layer, not particularly in this region, but eastern Canada, western Canada. And what you find is that it is an abundant source. So the problem with peat is that it contains a lot of lowland species. So these are species that emerge in areas with high water tables. Often you don't find those species in upland areas. So the landscapes we're, you know, creating are upland landscapes. So you can't buy most of the seed at a commercial supply. You know, the areas are simply way too large. And you can buy these species, they're often too expensive to actually go and purchase on a large scale. So we're trying to see, can we use this LFH layer that does contain an abundant, diverse amount of propagules, can we use it to revegetate these disturbed landscapes?
When you say propagules, what do you mean? Is that seeds or roots?
Well, it includes actually seeds, roots, and spores, such as horsetails.
So what you're saying then is if we're taking soil that's from one area and putting it into another area, it's not necessarily suitable because you have different types of plants than what normally would grow there?
Exactly. If you take, you know, plants from a wetland, put it on an upland, only species that can tolerate different moisture regimes are gonna establish. Most of the species that you'll see establishing using that types of soils are annual, biannual species. These are species that produce a lot of seed and are wind dispersed. So you can sometimes end up with a community that's not as diverse as what you want. It may not be heading towards a trajectory of your upland plant communities.
And one of the things that you presented in your talk was a difference in how deep you have to go in the soil, whether it's 20 centimeters as opposed to 2 centimeters. What's that all about?
Well, we're looking at application depth. If you look at, you know, a seed or plant vegetative part, their abundance decreases with increasing depth. And most, you know, for seeds, they're not going to emerge past 2 centimeters burial. So instead of applying at thick depths, maybe we can use more donor soil by applying at thin depths, because you're still putting the same amount of propagules on the surface regardless of the application depth.
So it's no sense that when you're planting a garden, if you put your seeds too deep, they're just not going to grow.
Exactly.
How did you go about doing your testing?
Well, what we had did is we set up the experiment at a large scale. So none of these plots are your typical 3 by 5 meter plots. We're using mining equipment. These are 300 ton haul trucks, literally carry a house. Everything set up large scale. And for sampling, it's just, you know, spending weeks in the field collecting vegetative and soils data.
One of the pictures that you showed in your presentation, you did have this great big huge equipment out there trying to spread the soil. How can they do that and keep it at a very thin layer if you're talking about 2 centimeters?
Well, right now we do not have, I guess, the current equipment that can do that. So what we have to do now, we have to move back to small plots and see, do these thin application depths result in similar emergence, you know, as thick application depths? And if it does, then I guess the next step is going to, you know, discover what type of equipment can we build to apply at shallow depths, perhaps a monster manure spreader.
What are the implications of your work, your findings, for future reclamation efforts?
Well, what we're finding in terms of at least D-ecosites, so they're, you know, aspen forests, is that with the use of LFH, you know, we're not relying so much on natural dispersal mechanisms. We've assisted natural recovery by placing those upland species, which we want to create, directly onto the disturbed landscape. So we're initially setting a trajectory more to those plant ecosystems we want to create, and this is really going to make reclamation, revegetation efforts a lot more successful in these oil sand regions.
What other work needs to be done? Are there some other things that you have to look at?
Yes. What we're finding is that we still know little about a lot of the species we're dealing with. So we want to find out what species are, you know, short-lived, what species are long-lived. We need to develop some type of seed bank classification system in this area, perhaps the boreal forest, so we can, you know, better manage in terms of applying, salvaging this material so we can increase the emergence of the species. But also what we've looked at is trying to utilize more donor soil, not only by looking at shallower depths, but placing it in patches. So we'll use the same amount of material, but spread it larger area, you know, so we'll allow species to emerge, disperse on site. Another thing that we are looking at is effects of stockpiling. So this kind of relates in terms of seed bank classification. We need to know how long can we stockpile this material before we lose a lot of the species. And another thing is we need to start breaking dormancy of seeds in the seed bank. Other ecosystems, mine sites, have found additions of fertilizer like nitrate or smoke water, you know, has unlocked some of the dormancy. So we're going to be looking at areas like that.
What is smoke water?
I'm just kind of new to this whole thing, but what it is just vegetation burnt, ran through some water, and what happens is that the smoke is concentrated in the water. The reason why we're using water is because we can't, you know, physically apply smoke to these disturbed lands. So there's a certain compound in smoke, you know, that some Australian researchers have figured out that unlock this dormancy. It's bentaloid. But they're not exactly certain how it triggers, you know, seeds out of dormancy. But what they do know is that it can be related to, you know, forest fire disturbances.
Thank you very much.
And thank you.
That was Dean McKenzie, a master's student in land reclamation in the Department of Renewable Resources at the University of Alberta. Another presenter at the Symposium on Oil Sands Reclamation was Dr. Jonathan Hornung. He's doing postdoctoral research at the University of Alberta on reestablishing wetlands in oil sands areas.
Specifically, we're looking at how wetlands become what everybody knows as wetlands, but when those wetlands are filled not with the regular water that everybody assumes is in wetlands, or are lined with the regular sediments or the ground that everybody assumes, replace that ground and that water with the CT byproduct that is made after oil sands processed materials, replace the water with oil sands bywater. So you have these things that have gone through these harsh chemical reactions, and they do, and they aren't regular water, but the fact is there's a lot of it up there, and we have to make wetlands or something. We have to remediate. We have to make this water better. Well, that's kind of what we're doing up there. We're trying to find out how the water, how you can take this processed water and turn it back into a wetland, the processed materials, processed water, those sorts of things.
Now, how are you going to do this in your study?
Well, we're just gonna look at how cattails, typha, grow in these different mediums, on the surface, we can say we're comparing soil and this consolidated tailings, which is the byproduct of the oil sands process, extraction process. We just see how a cattail plant will grow differently in those two substances. Well, what if you took the oil sands process material and put a little soil on top of that? Does the cattail still grow just as well as it does in normal soil? So understanding that, we can apply that over a broader scale and go, okay, and we can recommend measures that the oil sands will follow to make natural wetlands and have to speed up the remediation and the construction of naturally looking wetlands.
Do you have any idea at this point how things might work out?
Well, I think it looks good. I think the group I'm working with, studying the carbon flow, really has gotten to the mechanism of what is happening in these wetlands. We have to understand carbon and how it is stored in wetlands, how it accumulates in wetlands. And as that carbon accumulates more and more, you'll find it approximates a more of a real wetland. So getting down right to the mechanism of how carbon is taken up from these various materials or processed water is important to understand exactly how these wetlands will progress or develop.
What role do the cattails play in the environment?
Well, they're one of the more hardy plants. They're one of the more stable plants you're going to see in wetlands. They're going to stick around longer. They're going to grow in almost any weather. They're going to grow on the edges of these wetlands, and year after year they'll grow and die and grow and die and grow and die, and they're going to make a mat of dead material, of mucky old dead typha that are going to be used as food for little aquatic bugs and things like that. That's the part of the carbon sequestration I'm talking about, the growing and the dying and the growing and the dying. That carbon will stay in the wetland for a large part and just be cycled within it. Well, that's important because that means the wetland is functioning well. And largely the reason we're using them in our studies is because they're very ubiquitous. They're everywhere in every wetland. Everybody sees cattails, and they're hardy, and they'll stick around. We can study them, and we know they're going to live through it.
Once you're finished with this research project, how then would an oil sands company use this in their reclamation?
Oil sand companies could take the data that we provide and say, well, this is how well plants do in this kind of environment when you have, say, just sand or CT or CT and CT, or you have to add so much soil, or you can't add too much of this particular water. They'll know the parameters in which a healthy wetland can exist. In addition, one thing I haven't really talked about already is one remediation option we're looking at is scraping the scum off of already productive wetlands and putting it into these newly constructed wetlands that are built on processed materials using processed water, and inoculating these wetlands with these bacteria and these fungi and things like that. We're hoping that the inoculation of these good fungi and good bacteria will help the process, help the production of carbon, the sequestration of carbon, and just the functioning of the wetland as a whole. So those are two real remediation options that I think we're looking at.
So essentially you're trying to come up with the recipe to reclaim these.
That's a good analogy. It's a really good analogy. We're trying to find out a way to make a healthy functioning wetland out of oil sands process materials.
Good luck. Thank you very much, John.
Thanks, Cheryl.
That was Dr. Jonathan Hornung, a postdoctoral fellow in renewable resources at the University of Alberta. He was presenting his research on wetland ecology at the recent Symposium on Reclamation Science, sponsored by the Canadian Oil Sands Network for Research and Development. I also spoke with Dean McKenzie and Clara Kwolitsa. Along with the tarry oil sands deposits of northern Alberta, the province also has abundant supplies of what's called heavy oil. Heavy oil lies somewhere between light crude and sticky bitumen when it comes to viscosity. Flooding is a method used to push the thick, heavy oil through well pipes to get it out of the ground. Now, Dr. Alex Turda of the Alberta Research Council has developed a new technique which could vastly increase the amount of heavy oil that's recovered.
The main problem with the heavy oil recovery is that ultimate recovery factor, the percentage of heavy oil which we can produce, it's usually low. It's a lot lower than for light oil. So our main target is to increase the recovery factor.
So you're only getting, what, 5 or 10%?
Yeah, we are getting around 5 to 10 to 11% only for heavy oil.
How is it taken out of the ground at this point?
At the beginning, the heavy oil is produced under the so-called solution gas drive, and it's a primary recovery. It's the energy which nature is supplying for the production of the heavy oil. But this is not giving you too much, so you have to come with some energy from outside to increase the recovery.
When it comes to drilling for the heavy oil, what is the setup? How does a heavy oil well differ from a conventional oil or the lighter oil wells?
This question is a very good one, because the layout of the wells, I'm talking about vertical wells now, it's almost the same for light oil and heavy oil. However, for light oil, it's easy to produce the oil because the viscosity is very low, while for heavy oil, it's difficult. So when you are thinking of injecting something, both for light oil and heavy oil conventional production, you are forced to displace and to push oil on large distances of 200 up to 400 meters between injector and producer. This is easy for light oil, but this is extremely difficult for heavy oil.
Your team has developed something called toe-to-heel water flooding. What's that?
Toe-to-heel water flooding, first of all, it's a short-distance oil displacement method belonging to the same family or category of displacement like steam-assisted gravity drainage. There is a difference. Steam-assisted gravity drainage involves heat, while toe-to-heel water flooding doesn't involve heat. Now, the main point in short-distance oil displacement is that in toe-to-heel water flooding, we have a pattern, an arrangement of wells of the injector and producer that will promote the short-distance displacement. In other words, the vertical injector is close to the toe of the horizontal well, and in this way, the oil is displaced and immediately collected by the horizontal well. Moreover, this process is a gravity-stable displacement, which is giving another advantage to the process.
Why do you call it toe-to-heel?
We are calling it toe-to-heel because it's very suggestive. We are pushing the oil along the horizontal well from the toe, the so-called far end or toe, up to the heel. So in a very, very disciplined way, in a very controlled way.
Now, you've called this short-distance recovery. How short is the distance?
Yes, that's it's like 20 to 50, 60 meters only. You are pushing the oil until it's collected and produced.
How does that differ then from the way it's been done in the past?
It's 10 times less compared to a conventional water flooding, where you push the oil 200 foot, 400 meters.
Now, why would there be such a difference?
Because the pressure needed to push large distance is almost prohibitive, and it's producing a lot of problems in the production. Either you cannot inject enough water because the pressure is too high, or you produce channeling and the sweep efficiency and consequently, oil recovery is very low.
Now, this has been referred to as a revolutionary method, this new toe-to-heel water flooding. What makes it revolutionary? What makes it so different?
It makes it revolutionary because it's gravity-stable, so the gravity is fully working for you, which is helping you in increasing oil recovery. You have immediate oil production after injection, so you don't have a waiting time until the oil is increasing, oil production is increasing. And last but not the least, this process is more forgiving relative to the quality of injected water and operation. For instance, something very simple, when you have an ore cover, you interrupt the production for 1 month. For the conventional water flooding, you may have low production when you resume production. Here you have better production because during the the workover, the gravity is working for you. Gravity doesn't take vacation.
Is this a method that can be applied across all of the heavy oil fields in Alberta?
Just to a portion of 10 to 15% of them, but internationally there are a lot more prospects because there are a lot more reservoirs which are in the first phase of exploitation. In Alberta, in cases where we have reservoirs in the last stage of exploitation, this process is applied not exactly at the end of the production where everything is finished. We have to apply it a little bit earlier than the end of the life of the project.
Is it being tested anywhere right now?
The method has been tested for 3 years, more than 3 years, in a cooperation between Alberta Research Council and Enerplus Resources Fund. This testing is being done in the Medicine Head Glauconitic Sea field of Enerplus.
What results are you getting from this test down at Medicine Hat?
The results, I cannot go into details again due to this confidential agreement, but a first result which is very simple for operators is an increase in oil production rate by 30-40% with associated conditions of not increasing the investment for horizontal wells or for operational. In other words, you don't spend a lot more like in conventional water flooding, but you still have a 30%, 40% increase without those spendings.
What do you think is the ultimate benefit of this new method?
This method has a very, very nice future in Alberta because we have thousands of horizontal wells which are idle now. Horizontal wells are producing very prolifically in the first 3-4 years, but afterwards their production is decreasing and it's like that of a vertical well, so it's very low. In this case, we can apply and we can activate a lot of idle horizontal wells which were intended for primary production, but now we can activate them with a little bit of water injection at the top.
Thank you very much, Alex.
It was my pleasure.
That was Dr. Alex Turda, a research engineer in the Conventional Oil and Gas Unit at the Alberta Research Council in Calgary. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, the Alberta Conservation Association, Alberta Ingenuity, Calgary Technologies, Inc., the University of Lethbridge, the Alberta Gaming Research Institute, ICOR, the Informatic Circle of Research Excellence, Alberta Innovation and Science, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.